Welcome to the Voices of the West, hosted by Emil Franzi and dedicated to the principle that America was better off when our TV shows featured cowboys instead of lawyers.
Welcome to Voices of the West. Our guest is an old friend and a fellow columnist in the Green Valley News, Sorita Sun, Scott Dyke. Hi, Scott.
Good afternoon, Emil.
Scott, I'm going to start. We're going to talk about a little gig you've got coming up, so I'll let you introduce it, and then I'm going to drop something on you, but go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I want to tell you I'm sitting here with my Harold Stassen button on.
So. There you go, yeah. Yeah, well, mine was, my close thing I got to Harold Stassen was when I went with our good friend, well, I went with Bobby Dornan back in 96, you may recall, the congressman from Tel Aviv. And then we had my good friend Duncan Hunter, who did build a fence down around San Diego in his district all the way across and got enough money up to build the rest of it. But unfortunately, in 2008, when he went out of office, they elected a president who didn't want to finish it, did he? Okay.
Well, remind me to tell you about the President Eisenhower story when I was young. Right. Anyway, so I have an event coming up February 25th down here in Quail Creek in Green Valley, and it's at the main clubhouse building, and myself and Bob Palmquist, a noted ERP expert and Tucson lawyer, I'm going to present the gunfight of the OK Corral, what led up to it, and what was the aftermath. And then we're going to take questions and answers. And if Bob doesn't know any answers, and he knows all of them, I'll make the rest of them up.
Well, I know that this is very interesting because two of the most cogent pieces of information that have filtered through to me since I started doing this show about how to look at the West and how to look at movies, too, in general. Well, one of those pieces came from you, and the other came from my good friend Michael F. Blake, who just coincidentally wrote a book called Hollywood and the OK Corral. If you're not familiar with it, I've got a copy laying around somewhere I can get to you.
I'd love to have it.
Well, the one he only gave two pages was, what was that one? The one with Stacy Keach that was titled for Doc Holliday. It wasn't worth any more than that because it was
called Doc.
Doc, a terrible movie. You wouldn't even bother with it.
Beyond that, beyond worse than terrible.
Yeah, awful movie.
For a historian, anyway.
But let me give you what I learned from
Harris Yulin played some sort of a weak-kneed, somnolent Wyatt Earp. It was dreadful.
Well, anyhow, this is what I got from Michael, because I was one time I was bitching about some movie, and the historical inaccuracies are unbelievable. And, of course, Michael's dad was a longtime character actor, best known for being a bartender in High Noon, among other things. And
first guy in the movie, right?
First guy in the movie. He gets the first line. And he looks out at those four guys and says, it's going to be a great day for business or something, or words to that effect. But anyhow, after I got done moaning and groaning about the historical inaccuracy of another specific movie, he said, Franzi, when are you going to learn something? This is the entertainment business. If you want a documentary, go see the History Channel. Get the hell out of here. And we were talking about Tombstone. He said, you enjoy this, and you just got done telling me Wyatt Earp's a much more accurate movie, but it's a lousy movie, and Tombstone's kind of good, but even if it does have more things in it that aren't correct. Who cares? This is entertainment. You take it from there. The other thing I learned from a guy named Scott Dyke, who taught me that whenever you're in front of an audience on a given subject, historical subject of any kind in all probability, but certainly with regards to the Old West, that audience only knows what Hollywood's told them.
Accurate. Very true.
And thank you for that. It has helped me in so many ways to present things in the appropriate context, because as Saul Alinsky used to teach his organizers, You got to get to them from where they're at, not where you want them to be. You got to move them over.
Yeah,
so
hey.
What we've got with the gunfight at the OK Corral is we got a Henry Fonda movie, we got a Burt Lancaster movie, we got a James Garner movie. We got about six of them.
Well, actually, William Hart. It goes way back.
Well, you go all the way back, but I think that you had the one that was Frontier Marshal, but because Josie had him threatened, George O'Brien had to play it with under some other name, and that didn't work out too well. But it was, I believe it was a talkie.
It was supposedly based on Stuart Lake's book, which, you know, he actually did interview Wyatt and published after Wyatt died. But, yeah, Josie went, I think it was probably Louis B. Mayer, and anyway, she raised all kinds of heck, and they decided they weren't going to tangle with her, so they changed whatever they had to.
Yeah, and they didn't call him Wyatt Earp. They called him something else, and they called Doc something else. And
it's funny you should mention
that. But I've never seen that movie. I'd like to sometime.
Well, it's interesting. But when I wrote, they interviewed me down here in some of the papers when they were starting to promo this thing, and it was like, what do you think? I said, well, you know, the movie's just, everybody loves Tombstone. And the movies are great. They're just highly inaccurate. And for the life of me, I really never understood why, because the real story is better.
Good point. Well, I'll tell you what. They got more accurate as time went on. I mean, if you want total inaccuracy, go watch John Ford up in Monument Valley with Henry Fonda, okay? That's got nothing right. Including he purposely put the brothers in the wrong order because he was John Ford and he could.
Yeah, well, he was John Ford. And the story goes that Wyatt Earp and John Ford were acquainted with each other because Wyatt used to hang out on the sets of Hollywood. I don't believe that. He used to hang out with the old-time talkie guys like Bill Hart, who was actually a pallbearer at Wyatt's funeral. And he was the original big cowboy star back then. And Tom Mix was another one that also was a pallbearer at
yep.
Wyatt's funeral. And but as far as connecting with John Ford, he might have said hello to him. John Wayne, I don't think he ever met him. You know, it's just like...
Oh, that, they, with they all deference, a guy named Casey Tiefertiller, who we know and wrote a book about Wyatt Earp, has another one out, I guess. Does he have another book up, Brian?
Well, apparently it hasn't come out yet. It's going to be, from what I understand, he's going to analyze all the people who have been Earp experts, but apparently my guess is none are his equal as far as he's concerned. So it's
well,
going to be a
this
book
is a guy who
trash people.
This is a guy who blew me away, and I wasn't that up on it, but I am a pretty good reporter, and I can smell a fraud.
You're a very good reporter.
I can
and
smell
a greater columnist, by the way.
And I can smell a fraud. And when this guy came up with his hokey story about, and I thought it was for real. He said, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know Wyatt Earp and John Wayne were buddies. And then I looked at the story, and it was John Wayne, according to Tiefertiller, says that, who played Wyatt Earp on TV?
Hugh O'Brien
said to him that John Wayne said to him once at a cocktail party that, hey, you're doing a good job playing Wyatt Earp. I knew Wyatt Earp. That's what the whole thing was based on. Now, I don't know that Hugh O'Brien was lying. They both may have been drunk. Hugh O'Brien might have heard Wayne say, John Ford knew, you know, who knows what he really said, but you know what? You really don't exactly base a whole theory on that, with Tiefertiller claiming that Wayne therefore built his persona upon that of Wyatt Earp, who he watched and worshipped and yada, yada, yada.
Actually, you know, Wayne built his old persona on Harry Carey Sr. Another old silent movie. Was a great friend of John Ford. His son, Dobe Carey, Carey Jr.
played a lot of great movies.
Yeah, I met him. He wrote an interesting book called A Company of Heroes about John Wayne.
Right.
He passed away about 2 or 3 years ago. But anyway, so it's like facts get mixed with fiction. And as our late friend Gun Boyer said, oh, what a headache these one-book wonders give me.
yes. And as I walk through this stuff, it's interesting that some of the Gunfight at the OK Corral movies are very good in certain areas. Let me give you an example, and then I'll take a break because I'm looking at the clock coming up over there. But think about Gunfight at the OK Corral, 1957, Kirk Douglas as Doc, Burt Lancaster as Wyatt. Joanne, what was her, the gal who played Kate.
Joanne Drew?
No.
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 You got me.
I'm
a fog, but yeah, I know exactly who she is. Yeah.
That was the best Kate at any of them. That was the closest thing to reality on the relationship.
Yeah, because they got in the betrayal, which of course has been documented. Oh, she tried to betray Doc because
they were fighting, and he was throwing a knife at her, and all kinds of. And I said, "Now that was real."
Well, they didn't get along very well, but they just had this magnetism they couldn't. They had to carry on anyway. It was
yes,
an interesting relationship.
Yeah, that was an interesting. Forget all the factual parts of the movie. That was an excellent portrayal of the relationship between those two people. I don't know how they caught it, but they caught it well. She caught it well.
That's about the only thing they had right, but you're right.
Yeah, I was going to amend that to say that, yes. Well, wait a minute. They did have them in Tombstone. All right, I got to grab a break, Scott. I'll be right back. We're going to be talking about the gunfight at the OK Corral and Wyatt Earp.
Will travel, reap the card of a man. A night without armor in a savage land. His fast gun for hire heeds the calling wind. A soldier of fortune is the man called Paladin.
Voices of the West will be right back.
The Civil War was near when, quite accidentally, a hero who sneezed abruptly seized retreat and reversed it to victory. His medal of honor pleased and thrilled his proud little family group. While getting it on, some blood was spilled, and so it was planned he'd command F troop.
Welcome back to Voices of the West.
All right, we're back. We're with Scott Dyke. Scott, let's tell them about the event again.
I remember. It was Joe Van Fleet.
Joe Van Fleet, thank you.
Actually, I think she won a supporting Oscar in a James Dean film, The East of Eden, before she did that film. But, you know, she was a very noted actress.
Yeah, hell of a good actress, and played the best Kate of all, the only thing that was anywhere near reality. And the only one that, where you got an interesting relationship movie is then you come up to Hour of the Gun, which was even more inaccurate than any of the others.
The John Sturges movie, yeah.
Except for one detail, you had a pretty interesting, even though the doc was about 20 years too old, but
maybe
you had
30. But Jason Robards was an alcoholic at the time, so that worked.
That worked. Jason Robards and Garner. Actually, Garner played a pretty good Earp, just as
he's
Earp.
He's the only one that ever played Earp twice.
Yeah, but he didn't want to count. Michael F. Blake says to me, I always say that because of the other Mike Blake. Michael Blake says when he interviewed Garner once, he reminded Garner that he'd played him twice, and Garner looked at him and said, "I did?" And he said, "Sunset." And he went, "Oh, yeah."
Yeah, the Bruce Willis movie, it was entertaining, but it was...
I thought it was kind of fun.
Preposterous, but anyway.
Yeah, right. What the hell? It was any more preposterous than John Ford and Monument Valley with Henry Fonda. But
sure.
And then again, you come back to the Henry Fonda movie, and you've got Walter Brennan playing Old Man Clanton.
Old Man
Clanton. That has nothing
was,
to do with any facts.
Was bad at the time of the OK Corral,
right,
by the way.
But it was a hell of a role, okay? The entertainment value of that was very good.
Well, how many movies did he boost up with his roles? I mean, the guy was just phenomenal.
Brennan?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, there are some guys we used to have, and we knew them, and we no longer do because Hollywood's kind of faceless, and there's some problems with that I won't even get into. But how many guys can we name that just their very presence in a movie moves it up from a C to a B or a B to an A?
Well,
guys like Lee Marvin, guys like Brian Keith, guys like Walter Brennan.
Gene Hackman.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah,
these are the guys that we used to know, and when we go to the theater, we knew what we were paying for.
And you know what you're going to get.
We knew what we were going to get.
Yep.
Yeah.
And
anyway,
way back when, in a lesser role, Ward Bond. You know, don't get me
wrong. Oh, yeah.
All those, auxiliary actors in the 40s and the 50s. I mean, Ward Bond was in so many award-winning, Academy Award-winning movies. Isn't it funny? I think he was in two or three in the classic year in 1939. He was in Gone with the Wind. He was in, I don't know, I forget, there's two or three others he was in.
Yeah.
Just, and everybody, well, let's not get into politics about what happened in Hollywood, but
yeah,
he's been forgotten, that's for sure.
Well, the great Edgar Buchanan, who was part of the Glenn Ford stock company. He was in 17 Glenn Ford movies, by the way, just for counts. And he was a dentist in Pasadena Playhouse, so somebody said, you want to try out for this movie part? Okay.
He was a good fit.
Oh, he was a great fit. He always played the judge, you know?
I could get on with you, and we'd have to have a three-hour show. We talked about all the great character actors.
Actually, we tried to do that, and it took three one-hour shows to go through them all.
I'm sure it did, yeah.
And here's the ultimate Western movie trivia question. How many guys killed Jackie Lem?
Okay, that's a good question.
Well, he's in 129 Westerns, so go figure.
Well, probably at least 130.
Yeah, not to mention other movies.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to what you guys are talking about for real. The real gunfight at the OK Corral occurred kind of accidentally, didn't it?
I think so. I mean, I don't, going to talk too much about it because some of your folks might want to come down. And let me just say this for those that are interested for it. It's advanced ticket sales only. There won't be any tickets at the door. We've already had over 250 people sign up. So it's and I don't know what they hold, 350 something. It's going to be a packed house. But you know, if you really want to do that, come down to Quail Creek. You and I have dined there once or twice. They got a neat restaurant there, and come down and have an early dinner. And this show starts at 6:30, and we're gonna try to zip through as fast as we can, something that ought to take 5 weeks, but we're going to do it in an hour or so. And then we're going to have questions and Q&A from the audience. But get down and get your ticket now, and it's really expensive, $5 a head. So
now, how did it get named the gunfight at the OK Corral when it really wasn't?
A mistake by Wyatt in a later life. It was on a... It was on the block on Fremont Street, which ran parallel to the main street down there, Allen Street. And the OK Corral entrance was on Allen Street, but there was a back entrance if you wound your way through a little bit on Fremont Street. So it was about half the block down from there. It wasn't, you know, so, you know, we're going to get into that in detail. But, it was misnamed, but Wyatt just recollected wrong. And it stuck. It's got a catchy name, right? So it did stick.
You know, one of the problems you have with everybody's recollections of everything is none of us get it right. We just don't get it right. I mean, I do that all the time. I thought it was, oh, no, it isn't. Okay, thank you. Hmm. Where you can go back and look and verify when you can't. So people don't necessarily lie in their memoirs, although many do. And mostly they just don't tell you. But all kinds of things, people just make an error about what they're doing. I was reading on, I can't even remember who it was, but it was somebody's biography, and somebody said, God, he made a major error about his own life. And I'm going like, yeah, well.
And people jump on it, the critics, as lies. They're, most of the time, really, it's just a misremembrance, if you will. And they get caught up in things, and they're focused on a bigger part of the event, and they lose... They lose sight of this and that, and no one reminded that they say, "Oh yeah, that's right."
it has something to do with why eyewitness is shaky, because if six of us watch the same event, we're going to have six slightly variables.
You know, that's so true, Emil. I was a cop a long time ago and didn't get into that stuff much. I was just a kid. Later on, I was a PI in New York. And they dealt with the police and got involved with a few instances, not many. Pretty young guy at the time. But it's amazing with the reports you got on an incident that happened. You get five different versions. And you sit there and you watch their eyes and you know they're telling you what they think is the truth. But you get four or five different versions. It's amazing.
You know what? Yesterday there was a stray dog came up to the back door. My wife said, hey, look at that. There's a stray dog out there. And he said, oh, she said he just took off. So I ran to the front door, opened it up, and I saw a small, skinny brown dog. My wife saw, well, he wasn't skinny.
Well, there you are.
Well, I got a glimpse of him. She got a glimpse of him. What do you want to know? I don't know.
Well, that's just casual, man.
Or her. Who knows?
If there's angst and adrenaline involved.
Oh, yeah.
Or shooting or something like that, that really charges anybody up, including people who are bystanders. You know, they're just running on adrenaline, and they get all kinds of variations.
Okay, without giving this away, so people say, I don't have to go because I heard it on the radio, what do we want to tell them about the OK Corral fight?
It was an accident that was going to happen anyway. That's my take.
With a different, perhaps,
the results would ever be different because, quite frankly, we're talking about professionals against amateurs. And it was a no-contest operation, you know. And I'll touch on that, too. And I'm sure Bob will as well. You should ask me a little bit about Bob for your listening audience.
Yeah, we ought to do that.
To understand, you know, what his background is.
Well, I have a suggestion. Why don't we grab an early break, and we'll come back, and you're going to tell us who Bob Palmquist is.
I'll be glad to.
Whistle me up, our memory. Whistle me back where I want to be. Whistle a tune that'll carry me to Tombstone Territory.
Voices of the West will be right back. Welcome back to Voices of the West.
And reminding you once again of that era when television shows had real music. Scott Dyke, our guest, he'll be up in Quail Creek on the 25th at 6:30 with Bob Palmquist, telling you everything you ever wanted to know about the gunfight at the OK Corral. And you're going to tell me everything I need to know about Bob Palmquist.
Well, I wish I could tell you everything about Bob. Unfortunately, you couldn't be with us today. His mother passed away today. I just talked to him this morning, but it was, you know, she died in her sleep. She was 92, but still, it's a loss, no matter what the age or anything. So, but anyway, Bob has a specialty law practice in Tucson. It's dealing with strictly Indian law, water rights, and things of that nature, tribal nature. But he was been involved with the Wyatt Earp historical chase for, you know, decades. He was, as a young guy in college, he hooked up with the late Glenn Boyer and did a lot of research with him, and actually did some field research for Glenn. You know, that's how far back he goes. So, and he's about 11 times smarter than I am. He's a Phi Beta Kappa from Penn Law School, so it's hard to keep up with him. But he has all his retentive qualities. So I'm glad he's going to be with me, because if any questions, Bob's going to know the answers, or I'll be fumbling through my files.
Okay.
So he's written dozens and dozens of articles going back 30 years about Tombstone and the Earps and whatnot. And we got together probably half a dozen years ago, and we lunch periodically and get together like you and I do.
Yes, sir.
And he's really a fountain of knowledge, and he stays tuned into everything, and he has immediate recall, and he has a very dry, droll sense of humor, which is I appreciate greatly.
So the two of you are going to do it back-to-back. We did that one time down there, and I can't remember, what was the exact subject?
We did the Centennial, the movies that were made in Westerns in Arizona, or about Arizona. That's what we did.
And I remember what we said to each other. You know, next time we got to charge for this. And I say, you have decided
well,
to do
that.
You learned that one. Yeah, we must have had 300 people at that time.
Well, we did. And that was kind of funny. And for your audience, Abel came down, and we had dinner before it started, and I had no idea what was going to show up, and it was free. And we really didn't promote it very much, but it was people down here at Quail Creek would say, well, I knew the guy was involved with booking entertainment. He said, can you do something for the centennial about the gunfight? I said, I don't want to do the gunfight. So they said, well, what? I said, well, I'll do something on the movies. And I thought, well, I need help there, so of course I called you. And you were down there and saying, how many people are going to be here? I said, I have no idea. I didn't have an idea. We walked in a half hour early. There were already 150 people sitting there. And then later on, there was like over 300 people. And for your audience, Abel goes over to me, nudges me and says, what the hell are you doing this for free for? Look at the money out there. But anyway, we had a great time. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Actually, we got to think about doing it again, too. We could find another subject. I think you spent a little bit of time. IRP is not the only Western subject you're into, nor
no.
I.
No, and for sure you aren't, you know, with all your guests and whatnot. I have a spattering of understanding and some of my own opinions about the Custer and the Little Bighorn and all that kind of stuff. I spent quite a few years looking into that. And a little bit of knowledge on Billy the Kid and the Lincoln County Wars and a few other things. But, you know, I don't proclaim to be any great expert, but I've spent a lot of time in the field on these things, traveling to these and examining.
Well, because you get, you're kind of like Glenn and some other people of not too many, nowhere near enough. You actually go out and look, like my good friend Sandy Vandenberg, too. I mean, anybody that hangs over the side of the cliff at
yeah, you told me that story. Well, I
and takes off his boots because they're tripping his metal detector.
Well, I have lowered myself down to Brunkow Mine, south of Tombstone. That was rather foolhardy. My wife is enlisting, so I can say that one. You know, with a rope tied to the bumper of a Jeep. And I lowered myself down, wondering if it was going to be a true grit experience with rattlesnakes at the bottom.
There you go.
But that was when I was younger. I don't do that anymore.
Yeah, I'm getting a little old for some of this stuff too.
Well, you and I've been on a few events. I remember one time we went down to interview Ben Trawick.
Oh yeah.
And he's doing well, by the way.
Good.
I talked to him a few days ago. Former Tombstone official historian. Ben's about 88 now, and they've got a new pair of hearing aids from the VA so he can hear me. And so we had a nice conversation. But when we went down there, I think you and I looked at the original Watervale site, which was Tombstone before it was Tombstone.
Right.
And we had a guy with us that had GPS and everything. And so, you know, it's kind of fun. It doesn't change anything, and there's been people there before I have been. But I always thought, you can't go and talk about something unless you've been there, and that's one of the criteria, you know, and that's what I try to do. It's like I gave lecture series on Little Bighorn, and Glenn actually humiliated me saying, have you ever been there? I said, no. He said, well, how the hell can you talk about it then? I said to myself, good point. So, the next year I went over there and spent 3 days walking the entire battlefield in Montana. But there's something different if you've been there. I mean, with me, I get a sense
of
history. I get a feel for it. There's been two or three seminal events that I've had where the hair in your neck rise. One of them was Pickett's Charge. I went to school there, by the way, so I'm well familiar with it. The other one was the Arizona and Pearl Harbor, and the third one was the Little Bighorn. You know, I could visualize everything in my mind's eye and say, wow.
Yeah, Valley Forge and Gettysburg come to mind for me.
Mm.
All right, Joe has a question. Hi, Joe.
Hey, I am enjoying this immensely. But due to the fact I was raised 15 miles from there, I do have a question. In all your research, in your buddy's research, how many old-timers whose relatives were there did you interview to get oral history from? Not the printed history of the papers, but I mean people that their relatives were there.
Okay. Loaded question. Setup question.
Yes, it is.
I'll tell you this. I have immense files from Boyer and from John Gilchrist, who spent an enormous amount of time in the 50s interviewing these people. So I had access to files. How many do I personally interview? Very few. I interviewed one of the last Klans about 12 years ago, I think, down at the at Boot Hill. And, of course, Trey Wick has been there for 40-some years, but that doesn't really count. But he interviewed a lot of people, too. Boyer had some. Gilchrist had the most. And I have all these files. I got a lot of information from Bill Schillingberg, who was John Gilchrist's right-hand research man. He lives up in Tucson. He wrote the great book, I think, Tombstone AT. So, yeah, I've had access to stuff that perhaps not a lot of people have.
It would be fascinating to see if they ever interviewed O'Man Bennett. O'Man Bennett was a stagecoach builder. He was an apprentice when the stages went down, when they shut them down. But he continued to build them for the movie industry. Mm-hmm. And when I knew him, he was 93, and that was in, I believe, the late 60s, maybe 70. And he, of course, had a total different take on the ERPs than the same as my relatives did. And it's fascinating to me to listen to what you guys have found in print as opposed to what I had access to, my family oral history.
Well, oral history.
Quite interesting.
Joe, oral history, a lot of Boyer had was oral history, you know. I mean, he had this thousands of files, but in his head, he had this immense amount of oral history. And I deem that very important. And I understand the politics of it. I'm not going to weigh in either side. It doesn't make any difference now. But, you know, I mean, there's a quotient about who was left after the silver played out to talk about it and who went on to other bigger, better things. And a lot of people just got left behind, and most of them were, for the most part, urban being Tombstone. They were small ranchers,
right,
and they were out in the hinterlands, and they knew, their relatives knew Johnny Ringo and guys in the Klans and the Clowers, and they were bad guys, but they were all kind of in this thing together, which was kind of quasi-legal about the Mexican cattle and all that kind of stuff. So they had their sympathies. And there was also a political affiliation between the cowboys and the Europes. The Europes, just by their own profiteering, were Republican in nature, meaning the party. And the small ranchers were Democratic, you know, by party.
Right.
So you had politics mixed into this, too. And we know how that works out, right?
Well,
nothing has changed
much. Well, that's one that I've always, you know, was privileged to. There was an old timer there in St. David whose family was ranching in the Whetstones.
Mm-hmm.
And according to his grandfather, Wider snuck in, shot that guy in his bedroll. He was laying on his bedroll, shot him while he was in the bedroll, and then started to get out there, and that's when the other guy started shooting at him. But, you know, that's...
Oh, which guy in the bedroll are we talking about?
Curly Bill. Yeah, well, I wouldn't probably want to buy into that because of the time of day that it happened. I can't believe. Of course, Curly might have been drunk in there at 11, 12 o'clock or midday.
If you read it,
according to the people who were riding with Wyatt, who turned tail and ran, by the way, did not support him. Yeah, you know, he just rode right into him. You know, unplanned. Yeah, and I probably put a lot of credence in what they say because they acted in not a cowardly fashion, but they weren't there to back his play. And all of a sudden, Wyatt by his own self, he had his gun belt loosened down around his hips because it was hot, which means it wasn't 6 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, a bedroll shooting, I wonder about that one. But
well,
that one's been argued for years, of course.
Of course, yeah, if you were gathering cattle all day in the morning, like you're supposed to, and then at noon you're resting out. I would buy that. Anyway, this is fascinating. Thank you so much, guys. This is great listening.
Thanks for calling, Joe.
You bet. Bye.
Thank you, my friend. Perfect timing for a break. Scott, we'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Voices of the West will be right back. Welcome back to Voices of the West.
By the way, talk about a movie that should have made it and didn't. That's it. Hallelujah Trail. Burt Lancaster, Lee Remick, Brian Keith, Elmer Bernstein film score, Sturgis directing. Everything was there, and the movie was a turkey. Too bad. But it was a great film score anyway. All right, we got about 9 minutes left with Scott Dyke on the 25th in Quail Creek. What day of the week is that?
Thursday, 6:30. And again, let me repeat, there's no sales tickets at the door, so if you want to come,
you better let them know early.
And well, you better get down there and buy a ticket. Get down to the front desk, go to the Quail Creek Clubhouse.
Well, yeah, but if you live up somewhere around Tortolita like I do, how do you get a ticket? Can you do it online? Can you do it on the air? How do you do that?
I'm not that sophisticated. I'm a 19th century guy, but I guess if you come down last minute, come see me, you know, and I'll see to it. But preferably get down here.
No, I got what you're saying.
We're liable to get sold out.
I get what you're doing there, and that's great. Maybe you ought to think about doing it further north.
Well, I could do that, I suppose. I live down here, so it's easier.
Well, I got that
I'm
part.
I'm lazy.
But
you and I probably ought to resurrect what we did. That people loved that. It really, really did. And we had a lot of plugged-in videos and stuff that were fun.
There's some things we could do with that one. There's some things we could do with soundtracks, too.
Because
this is still some of the greatest music that America produced while all those dingbats over at the universities were written that toneless stuff that nobody wants to hear anymore anyway. Anyhow, we've got to call.
Is, Emil, you're a 19th century man as well.
Yes. It was a damn good century, and don't you ever forget it. Beat the hell out of the 20th when it came to human freedom.
Yeah, well, you and I are Bridey Murphy, right?
There you be.
Yeah,
hey, maybe we get to go back then instead of forward.
Well, that's what some guys say. How would you know? I said, because I was there.
Yeah, I was there too. Me and Patton. Remember that deal about? Well, remember that deal? Georgie was one of Napoleon's field marshals. I was one of the one of his divisional commanders.
Yes, right. He was out in the old graveyard. Well, I was there, of course. That's what I know.
Okay, excuse me.
Yeah.
No cough button here, Laurie. You're up.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am. Hey, how you been?
Good. How have you?
We're okay. How about yourself?
Good, thank you. You sound great.
All things
so
considered.
I've got a question. My parents came out here in 1942, went down to Tombstone, of course, as most all the other tourists did. And actually, she had said, my mom's still alive, she's 96, she said they went to one of these shows, and that, in fact, where they had them originally was where the gunfight took place. So she was digging in the dirt, with her cowboy boot on and went down probably 6-10 inches, you know, as they were waiting for the show, and came across several bullet slugs. Any way to date those?
You got them?
Yeah, I do.
Well, I'll tell you what, 1942, I don't doubt that at all, because in 1957 at Fort Bowie, we were able to, 57 or 58, we were able to dig up all kinds of weird stuff. fired 50 caliber brass from the rimfire rifles that were used before the center fires, a padlock, and a whiskey bottle. I've got one round of that brass still, and that dates by the brass.
We exhumed Civil War ordnance at Fort Taylor in Florida, and I still have some of that too. You know, so you can find it all over the place. Some of our ordnance was still live too.
Yeah, I didn't know whether there was any way to date it.
Well, you got to figure out what it is before you can date it. And round ball or conical or what is it?
No, it just looks like a slug, you know, a small, it's probably maybe the size of a pea, flattened. And you can see, you know, part of the bullet still left.
And yeah, and it could have been a 22 round somebody fired off 1932, yeah. Who knows. Yeah. I suppose there's a way to age date it. I don't know.
All right.
But well, I'll ask any of our ballistics
people. When we meet, Emil, I'll bring them with me.
Hey, Lori, here's what you got to do. Call Charles Heller tomorrow.
Okay.
You think I'm kidding?
No, absolutely not.
He'll refer you, if nothing else.
Okay.
There you go.
Perfect.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
Yeah, there used to be a lot of cool stuff walking around out here. I remember old Fort Lowell when they just sat there. Mm. And old Tucson, before they finally got the lease on it with Shelton back about 61, that was just sitting out there. Hell, we took a keg of beer in there one time.
Yeah.
And it's fun watching old movies. I don't know how to tell you this, but it's been 77 years since the movie Arizona, which was the first movie made at old Tucson.
William Holden.
How, if you want to go 77 years back from that, you're somewhere back around the Civil War.
Mm.
So we're halfway, more than halfway beyond it, just with old Tucson alone. It's a historical site all by itself.
You're aging with both of us.
Yes. Those are those great Western movies I used to see in my dad's theaters when I was a kid. I could go walk in anytime I wanted. It was
well,
fun.
I was well before I was born. It was,
Johnny McBrown. Anybody remember
Johnny
that
Johnny McBrown. Yeah, I sure do.
Lash LaRue.
Rocky Lane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm going to try to think of a couple of more. Anyway, those are the days. We got about 3 minutes, boss. Anything else we want to let them know?
Well, no, I hope people get down here if they have an interest in it. And the last time we did this, I think a lot of people came from Tucson.
Yeah, they did. And you got a lot of times, like when my mother-in-law was still in Green Valley with my wife's sister, we would be in the neighborhood for other reasons. So between, if you're going to be in Green Valley from up here between now and the 25th, you go to the Quail Creek Clubhouse. Is that where you buy the ticket?
Yes, go right to the front desk. Walk in the front door, right in the front desk on the right, and there you are.
Yeah, on the website it says...
Tombstone, they'll figure it out.
Yeah, on the website it says the Madera Clubhouse in Quail Creek.
Right.
Mission $5. First come, first serve, as seating is limited.
Yes.
So that's...
We learned about that, didn't we?
Yeah, but there's something else we haven't learned about. Who's got the bar concession?
You know, somebody asked about this because I never thought about that. I said that's up to the folks at Quail Creek to figure out what they want to do, that kind of stuff. But then again, if I'm going to get people,
don't we get a thing about it?
Wait.
I'm just going to rhapsodize for the last minute and a half. We might think about making some kind of a deal with a loft and playing some movie clips.
Yeah.
What do you think? That would be up here, and it would be for a different audience.
I think you and I, before our days are up, we ought to do something up in Tucson. I really do, because people, it's not that this is certainly not my brilliant oratory. It's the subject matter that people love.
Yeah, right. I mean, this stuff carries itself. It's easy.
You're right.
We just have to put it in order, and we know enough about it to put it in order. I'm looking forward to this. I may very well trip down there. I'll let you know if I can make it.
Sure. Well, you're more than welcome.
Thank you, my friend. We got about another minute. What else is coming up in the Green Valley News that Scott Dyke might write about that my audience might care about?
Well, I'm telling your engineer, Harry Alexander, that I'd done a piece on Frank Stilwell.
Ah!
Blown away up at the train station by Wyatt Earp after his brother Morgan got killed. And I think next week they're going to run a piece that I did on a very famous lawman, you know, one of the probably most underrated lawmen in the West ever knew, Bob Paul, up in Tucson. And he was a Pima County sheriff.
Yes, he was. And the last time I looked, my good friend out of Tucson, Guns and Western Artifacts, Bob had his a six-gun that belonged to him.
Well,
it wasn't going for anywhere near what it would have been if it had been somebody
this
knew
guy
better.
Was twice the lawman that Wyatt Earp ever was. He was just an astounding guy. Giant of a man, by the way, 6'4", 6'5", about 250. But it was a whale. I mean, just an interesting story. That's going to come out. I think our column's going to go next week. But
all right. Thank you, my friend.
Anyway.
Thank you,
thank
Scott.
Thank you. Nice talking to you, Abel.
Thanks for listening to Voices of the West.